And hello and welcome, everybody, to another episode of Mad Barn Live. My name is Elisa Blow, joined, as always, by our founder and CEO of Mad Barn, Mr. Scott Ciesler. Good evening, sir.
Yes, good evening. It's week number two. We're back. I guess the plane is still flying.
It is. And actually, tonight's discussion is jam-packed. We have a lot of things we're going to talk about, but the meat and potatoes of this evening is gut health. And this is one of the big things that we do here at Mad Barn is help horses with gut health. It's actually the reason why I found Mad Barn, because I had a horse with ulcers and I'd done everything I could to try to treat him. And it was suggested to try a product called Visceral. I tried it. 2 weeks later, I had the horse in my dreams. And I'm not saying that's going to happen necessarily with everybody, but I'm just saying it was a real game changer, in particular for an off-track thoroughbred. And I'm sure there's lots of you out there watching today that have off-track thoroughbreds. So what we'd like you to do is stick some of your comments in right now. Tell us what you have. Do you have a horse off the racetrack? Do you have a quarter horse that's doing barrels that's maybe giving you some issues as far as ulcers are concerned? Tell us what you have. Tell us where you're watching us from today, too, because we'd like to know where you are.
Yes.
And, you know, feel free to ask questions as the evening goes on. The other thing, just a little bit of housekeeping before we start.
Absolutely.
We are going to ask you today, too, that you can find Mad Barn Live on your favorite podcasting app, and please feel free to rate it and like it.
Well, let's back up on the rating part. I'm not sure how I feel about it. Just find it.
And
like it. That's, don't worry.
Just say out. Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're going to get into it because it's a big night tonight. This is a huge topic. And again, some of the major questions that come through Mad Barn here. So, Scott, first of all, we want to have a brief overview of a horse's digestive system. And I know it's not, can't be brief necessarily, but if you can, a brief overview.
Well, I can do brief.
Okay.
Brief's not an issue. You have the stomach, you have the small intestine, you have the cecum, you have the colon, and we're at the back end of the horse.
All right, next question.
Really, so how do things go wrong? Like, how could this possibly go wrong? Well, there's a lot of reasons why things go wrong. But so, in all seriousness, we have the stomach. It's a small compartment in a horse. And I think most people, like, they've heard, okay, the horse needs to be constantly grazing, needs to be constantly eating. But why is that? Because about 30 minutes after the horse eats something, it hits the stomach, it's going to start passing into the small intestine. And this is what really differentiates the horse from, say, ruminants, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like a combination of a ruminant. For those of you, I guess, just explain what a ruminant is, I guess, is the four-stomached animal, the cow, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. is a popular one, deer, mm-hmm. other goats, sheep, all kinds of ruminants. There are great recyclers out there, we'll call them. Anyways, back to the point. The horse basically took that fermentation vat that's on the front of a ruminant and it put it on the back end. So it's able to use fibrous feeds like forage and low quality browse, if you will, being the feedstuffs, and still get energy out of it. I'm jumping all over the place here already. It's early. We'll try to get this thing back on track. But the great thing about so a ruminant, they can really extract a lot from, you know, plant material that humans or monogastrics really can't get anything out of. Like cellulose is a big one. They digest that and they produces VFAs and the ruminant uses that for energy. Well, the horse has kind of taken that and flipped it backwards. And it's taken advantage of the monogastric system where it can absorb protein, high quality proteins and, starches and sugars in the small intestine, and then still utilize the hindgut mm-hmm. as a source of energy. Now, we have to really consider when we're looking at the horse is like how it evolved this entire system. And it didn't evolve eating grain or high starch or high sugar feeds. So it's really not used to those things. It's used to eating actually really, really low quality browse. I'm just using browse mm-hmm. as a term to, it could be pasture, it could be any kind of vegetative material a horse might eat. Mm-hmm. And then that would reach the hindgut, ferment by the bacteria mm-hmm. in there, and that's how the horse derives most of its energy. So the bacteria ferment it, produces VFAs or volatile fatty acids, or short chain fatty acids. We can go through the whole list. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why scientists call these different things, but they do for some reason. So short chain fatty acid, volatile fatty acids, it's propionate, butyrate, acetate would be the three major ones. Mm-hmm. And that provides energy for the horse. And that is actually where the majority of the energy should come from for a horse. So like I've moved from digestive physiology into already what these energy sources are. But it really creates a crux of how we feed this horse, from what we're going to feed it, from the psychological and the chemical composition of what we're going to give this horse mm-hmm. is really related to digestive physiology. And so I guess to sunrise. Mm-hmm. So much for being brief, Lisa. Sorry. brief apparently is not my repertoire. We have a big fermentation vat in the back end. I don't want to be too flippant about it, but we'll call it, you know, if you're making beer, that's the fermentation vat. And that's where the horse should be extracting the vast majority of its nutrients. Minerals and vitamins will all be absorbed in the small intestine. And one thing as we get through this, some of the questions here that are going to come up, like really just kind of want to highlight it now is like kind of like the stomach's always thought of as just as like holding that really doesn't do much, maybe acidifies the feed and then passes it along. But there is actually an entire bacterial population within the stomach, even though the pH is as low as 2, which isn't normally favorable for bacteria. But as we know, like you go to the depths of the ocean, there's bacteria that live in these thermophile bacteria that can live in extremely high temperatures and adverse conditions. There's lots of bacteria that can live in the horse's stomach. So when we talk about the horse's digestive system and the microbiome, which we will be talking a lot about, it's all the way through stomach, small intestine, large intestine, the cecum, colon, everything.
Okay. So when I'm at home, I'm watching TV, the commercials come on, there's all sorts of commercials for probiotics for people, right? Yeah. And all of a sudden, all of us are using probiotics. We've got, you know, going back to say a lot of people eating yogurt because it's great for probiotics. You know, if you go to the grocery store, there's aisles now full of probiotics. And, you know, I agree, some are better than others and some work wonders, but we actually support the use of probiotics for horses as well. Why should my horse have probiotics? What's so important about that?
Well, I mean, yeah, the probiotics, like, good point. Like, we consume a lot of probiotics, we've used bacteria for multiple purposes through history. But why would you feed your horse a probiotic? A lot of times, considering like if we're doing something causing stress or like taking the horse out of natural vitamin, feed changes, worming, any antibiotic treatment, even like changing groups, right? Like a horse's undergo a stressor of just changing groups, give you time to add in some additional probiotics to really help balance the microflora. And because there will be disturbances during those times. And so adding some bacteria that we know will have a positive influence on the microbiome can really help transition a horse through those periods of stress.
And really, would you recommend a probiotic daily or just a probiotic when you think stress is going to be coming up with the horse?
Well, that's a great question. It kind of brings in a few things. Like there's some trains of thoughts. I guess there's some people believe that like when you feed a probiotic, it's going to colonize the gut. That is not what happens at all. Actually, once the microbiome is established, it's very firmly established, we're not going to get into this. Maybe in a future podcast, we'll dive into this and how microbiomes get established and what it really means. But what happens is you have this established microbiome and it may shift because of some of the stressors. And then we want to put bacterial culture in there that'll help the native population thrive and come back into balance. But those bacterial populations that we add to the feed won't colonize the gut. Okay. So as soon as you stop feeding it, basically those bacteria are eliminated.
Okay. So is it something then that, and we get this question quite a bit, do they need it for say 30 days before you notice the effect of probiotics? Because sometimes with people, it takes a couple of days for it to kick in. Or is it something that you notice the change in the horse right away? Especially if they have, say, like loose manure.
Yeah, and again, this is a great question. And there's like, you know, there's more that we don't know than what we actually do know. And so when you talk about dosages and how long it takes, it really, really depends on what the issue is. Right. And so you see some horses respond almost instantly. And you get these almost like miracle things. And you'll see those testimonials, right? And companies use them a lot. And they're like, oh, look, we have the most amazing thing ever. Well, they've cherry-picked those testimonials and they forgot the ones that didn't actually work. Because that happens too, where it absolutely doesn't show any benefit. And there can be multiple reasons for that. Maybe whatever the issue is has nothing to do with the bacterial population.
Right. Yeah. But maybe it's unrelated. A good first start if you're concerned, right?
Absolutely.
Lost
the question.
Why
there
don't
for
you
a
have
second.
A little drink of your tea?
Yeah,
there.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, we said we were going to have wine last time. Guess who forgot the wine?
No, right? Yeah. We do need to get the wine. This will make it more interesting.
And look, we have lots of people watching us already from all across North America. And again, please tell us, and all sorts of people, they're watching from Louisiana. Hey,
Louisiana?
That's a place we need to go.
Not right now because there's a hurricane rolling. Maybe it's a little east of there. I'm not sure. And,
well, I think our best wishes to everybody. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I see somebody here from Virginia too. And, you know, we have a lot of friends that use our Mabron products that are in North and South Carolina. And we're really thinking about them and our friends in Florida as well. Yeah. So, yeah. And hey, how about our friends out east in Canada too?
Yeah. Actually, my daughter's out there sending me pictures of uprooted trees. And yeah, no, it's,
That's a little scary.
Very unfortunate. But
we got lots of people and friends in Quebec, people with saddlebreds, people with thoroughbreds, all sorts of people joining us tonight. And thank you so much because, you know, Scott's a wealth of knowledge. And if you can get something like this, all this information for free, take it. Well, you can, right? All right. So I kind of want to, I'm going to simplify some things a little bit here, just based on some of the discussion and all these questions that are pouring in tonight. One thing that people say when horses are, you know, maybe have an unhappy gut or they're, you know, we were talking about probiotics, yes. But something that they say that does soothe the stomach is to feed a horse something like Timothy alfalfa cubes. What do you think about that? Or alfalfa pellets or something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, well, alfalfa a lot of times you'll see recommended, particularly with horses with ulcers, right? Mm-hmm. It's a great buffer. It's very nutrient dense in terms of a forage. It provides lots of nutrients, protein, high mineral content. But you do have to be careful. And this is why we use nutritionists. And this is why we provide the nutritional advice that it's not just a blanket recommendation that, yes, alfalfa is to be used for every single horse. Mm-hmm. But it does buffer and it is a great nutrient source. But it has to be in balance with the total diet and how much we use and implement. So yes, it can definitely benefit gut health. Absolutely. But like everything, it needs to be in balance with the total diet. So it's not, you never want to make a blanket recommendation to just say, yeah, go feed some alfalfa because this will be a perfect feed for gut health issues. Yeah. It really depends what the issue is and where it's stemming from, because it can cause some negative issues. I think we talked a little bit about alfalfa, or I have on podcasts, where it can have a very negative effect on like metabolic horses with insulin resistance. And it does seem to be a trigger for them. In a lot of cases, yeah, it does. It's definitely beneficial for gut health, but in some cases it can have other deleterious effects. So you do need to take all this in consideration. That's why we look at the entire diet. It's never about one supplement, one probiotic, or one feed that we're putting in there. It's the entirety of the diet that becomes a paramount importance of like what is going to provide the optimal health and gut health for your horse.
And what Scott's talking about is something that's really available to all of you that are watching. On our website, we have a button in the top right hand that says analyze diet. You fill out what your horse is eating. Be as specific as possible. If you have hay analysis, attach it. I talked to a lady today. She had recent blood work. Attach it. Send us all that stuff. Send a confirmation shot, not a picture of his head in the stall, a nice confirmation shot so we can see what he looks like to help you out as well. So all that is available, and that's what Scott's talking about when he says, you know, give us that information and we can help you balance out the diet. All right, so getting back to the subject here. What's the most, here's a loaded question. What's the most common gut issues that you see in horses and that you hear about?
Well, I mean, the most common gut issue you're going to hear about is colic, right? The word colic. But what does colic actually mean? I mean, it's such a generic term to basically describe anything related to the gut, any issue in there is colic. And so it becomes more important to describe exactly what the issue was in terms of like colic. Was it just, was it bloating? Was it like a gas colic? Was it an impaction? Was it just discomfort? Like, you know, was the horse showing discomfort? And to really kind of get to the reason why. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons why, particularly focus on colic and how to avoid some like easy solutions to avoid colic. That would be the number one. And then gastric ulceration, when you look at the data, and there's mounds of it now that just show the way we keep horses today, they're just predisposed to gastric ulceration. And so then that leads down the line to a lot of other issues. And then the hindgut dysfunction, dysbiosis, if you will, where we do see things like free fecal water syndrome. There just seems to be an inordinate number of horses with this issue. And you know what? Honestly, nobody actually has a really good answer for why it happens. And there's a lot of different things that work for people. And, you know, this, again, comes back to it's a varied issue. And no, there's no one blanket thing that's going to work for everybody. Yeah. But again, not to beat on this too much, But having a very fundamental understanding of what your horse is eating, mm-hmm. consuming, and is the diet balance is the mm-hmm. first step in anything, mm-hmm. honestly. Because like gut health issues, if you look at some of the research at mineral and vitamin deficiencies, mm-hmm. it's not just the horse, it's the bacteria. They require nutrients as well. And mm-hmm. so if you starve them for long enough, you start yeah. to see dysbiosis as well from not having a correct nutrient balance mm-hmm. for the bacteria. Mm-hmm. And it may be minor, it may be subtle, but it goes on long enough, then it yeah. becomes eventually a serious issue.
Well, and that's the calls we get sometimes from people who have recently rescued horses. And yeah. so you know that those horses have been starved and their guts are in trouble, right? Yeah. So, you know, we get a lot of phone calls with people who are trying to help. Now, Scott, the questions are coming in like crazy. I'm gonna jump to just some of these just before we move on to the next topic, because they
yeah, you bet.
Probiotic related. So we'll stay with the probiotics just for a few questions and then we'll move forward. Okay. Does that work?
Yeah, and I think the whole reason we're doing this is for the people that are watching. So it's important that we actually answer yeah. their questions.
Well, because Sonia's watching and she's been holding on for a while. And, you know, I want to answer her question. So Sonia is asking, is a probiotic needed daily for it to be beneficial? We just talked about that, Sonia. And, you know, some people do give it daily, correct?
Yeah, you have to. Like, it has to be fed daily, again, because it doesn't, like, it's not like you're putting this bacteria population in there and it's going to colonize the gut. And I'm going to take a veer off here completely. They've done studies in cattle and water buffalo who have very distinct ruminant environments. And I won't go into this in too much detail, but they evacuated the rumen contents, sterilized as best they could, and then swapped contents. And the hope was they could take the buffalo contents, bacterial population, okay. and make it inhabit the cow. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is buffalo are better at digesting really fibrous material okay. than cows are. And so they're like, oh, we can make the cow more efficient. Mm-hmm. And it took less than a week and the microbiome reverted right back to what the original microbiome was in that cow. So when you think about that, like, and I guess people probably don't have a concept of how big the rumen is, but you know, you're looking like say a 50 to 100 liters of material in there right. that you're swapping around. That's a huge amount of volume.
Yeah.
And it less than a week it swapped back. So to think we're gonna put this tiny amount of bacteria mm-hmm. in there and it's gonna colonize is wrong. What it's going to do though, is it will live in the gut mm-hmm. in different phases of the gut, depending on what bacteria are. Like some bacteria will do well in the stomach because they like the low pH. Some bacteria will do well in the small intestine because they like the neutral pH, and some bacteria will thrive in the hindgut, mm-hmm. which is why we use blends of probiotics. We blend bacteria. We don't just use one strain because we want to hit all these different mm-hmm. sections. So it does need to be fed daily. I guess there's a long answer to the to the question she asked. Yes, you do need to feed it daily.
All right, so that's for you, Sonia. Are probiotics necessary after antibiotics? Yes, and right.
Well, yeah, you say yes. I
you guess say no.
Well, necessary is a hard word. Is the horse going to live?
Well, yeah.
Because you give
it antibiotics. Is it a nice thing to give it when it's getting bute and things like that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to help. I mean, that's really what we're looking to do is optimize and like speed up, you know, any deleterious mm-hmm. effects that happen from worming, antibiotics, or NSAIDs that may have been fed to that horse, is get it back to its optimal as quickly as possible.
Right.
If you don't feed them, yeah, for sure it's going to get back there eventually.
Scott, is this why when this is totally wacky Elisa talk here, is this why when I'm at the doctor and he gives me a prescription for antibiotics, he says, and I want you to eat lots of yogurt with this? Is this why? Same
yeah,
idea, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's this battle between like good and evil, if you will. Yeah, like, if you want to make this a black and white comment, a very binary conversation, like the pathogenic bacteria and the ones you want in there, they're always both present. Mm-hmm. It's about making sure that your symbiotic ones mm-hmm. are the ones that are winning. Mm-hmm. And so when you give antibiotics, I mean, that's just broad spectrum napalm, mm-hmm. right? Like that's a little general, but just for the sake of this, it's you're killing everything, the good and the bad. And so what you're trying to do with the yogurt or probiotic is repopulate the beneficial ones as quickly as possible to make sure you're not allowing the pathogenic ones to take hold.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Now I know why I have to take the yogurt all the time. All right, so
it's delicious
and it is quite lovely. Look at all these people, my goodness, they're from all over the joint. We even have buggy horses.
We might live for week three.
We might. Some people here are actually, this is really cool. And this is because of, Scott and I both come from the standardbred racing world originally. There's some people on here that have some Amish buggy horses, which is amazing because that's really the original second career for many standardbred racehorses, right? They move on to a life in the Amish community. And so, yes, because they were racehorses, it's the same thing. Their life was a little bit more stressful than the average horse that's sitting out in the backyard.
Yeah,
likely they have ulcers, right? Or some issues. So, okay. I had one other here that I wanted to do. Oh,
you have the one on the screen you're missing there.
Oh, sorry. Oh, do you need prebiotics or probiotics? Yes, there's a difference between the two.
So just let's define that quickly, though, for because there is so much confusion around a prebiotic. But a prebiotic is basically a feedstuff for your bacteria, preferably your beneficial bacteria. But sometimes it's just a feedstuff for all bacteria. And a probiotic is actually the living organism. Now, there is some confusion even among probiotics in the sense that we have bacteria and we have yeast. So those are two very different classes, but generally get lumped in the probiotic. For some reason, I've always like classified bacteria as probiotics and then yeast as its own. I don't even put it in the probiotic category, but it is in there. But then prebiotics get misused too, because some people like call indigestible things, even to the bacteria, prebiotics. But for mainline purposes, prebiotics are things that will beneficially feed the bacterial population. Now, your horse should be filled with prebiotics just in its natural feed stuff. So forage is the greatest prebiotic there is. So do you need to go out and buy an extra prebiotic? Not necessarily. Now, there are very specific things like or moss, they do for short term, which is classified as a prebiotic. And that has very, very specific properties. So it's a carbohydrate that comes from yeast cell wall. And it actually interacts with the immune system at the gut level. I don't know, like most people maybe don't realize that about 60%, 60, 65% of your immune system is run basically from the gut level up. And so it's very important, any interaction that happens in the gut. And again, we get back in the microbiome, and maybe this could be a whole talk unto itself, interaction between the bacteria, what they call the gut-brain axis, and all of the things that happen in that communication. But there's these specific, back to the prebiotic, compounds, they do stimulate or modulate the immune system. And there's a big difference between those two things. And again, this is only, we don't want to be here all night, so I'm not going to dive too much into this. But so things like moss, which are considered a prebiotic, can definitely be highly beneficial, particularly if you have significant like hindgut issues where a pathogen maybe has taken hold and the probiotic alone isn't taking care of it. Things like inulin from like chicory root and stuff like that are rapidly fermentable. I don't know if the value is quite there in the horse. Again, just when we're feeding them properly, if we're feeding them improperly with a high grain diet, then yeah, there's probably more benefit to it. But kind of come back to how we approach things is like, let's fix the feeding program first and foremost before we even ever look at probiotic supplements, anything. Like that base diet has to be right. And then, okay, if we do, you know, there's other extenuating circumstances where we do need to add something specific, like we're talking about competition horses. They're just under constant stress. So like, yes, they do need the additional support on top of that diet. So again, long answer to pre and probiotic, but it is I know it's something that comes up a lot.
I just want to touch on Chelsea's. I know we've got Nadine's up, but I just want to touch on Chelsea's too, because it's that time of year when people have their mares in full, you know, the foaling season is going to be in the next few months or so for a lot of people, you know, especially with racehorses, you're looking to foal January, February, March. Is it safe for a broodmare that's in full, a probiotic, or is it recommended for a broodmare in full?
Yeah, actually, absolutely. And actually, not necessarily just the probiotic, but these moss products that I was just talking about with the immune system. One of the big issues you'll have in any with the mare in foal is foal diarrhea, right? It's a very real issue and a health concern. And so anything we can do to increase the immunoglobulin level and colostrum, so that foal needs to get those immunoglobulins within the first 24 hours. And these specific carbohydrates have been shown, again, to modulate the immune system, and it happens in the brood mare. So if you start like a month before foaling, or two months even, it has been shown to increase IgG concentration in the colostrum. So that automatically is going to transfer more into the foal. It's a straight linear relationship. The more quantity that foal consumes, the more it's going to absorb, and the better its immune system is going to be. And because the nice thing is we keep foals on mares, you get this transition for a couple of weeks where there's still colostrum and all these immunoglobulins, which then like just protect actually the gut lining. she asked if it was safe, and I'm still talking about this. And yes, it's safe is the answer. But, you know, I'm going to go off track here a little bit, maybe hopefully answer some other people's questions. So great work at the University of Guelph at the vet school, where they isolated specific bacteria in foals, because again, foal diarrhea is a big issue. And this is, you know, this becomes an area where people talk about, well, which strains of bacteria, which strains are most important. And again, one train of thought is, well, we should take the native population that is already inhabiting the digestive tract, and we should feed that back to them. Mm-hmm. Or you can take a population that some of them are native, some of them may not be native per se, and that's what we're going to feed, because they have very specific characteristics in how some of the molecules they produce inhibit pathogenic bacteria, or help to modulate the immune system as well, or just have a beneficial effect overall. And some of the work by Dr. Weiss actually at the vet school, when they did isolate specific bacteria out of foals that was natural inhabited, they grew it up, and they went and did a trial and fed it back to these foals, and actually performed worse than the control.
Oh, yeah,
which was interesting, so from there, the conclusion was, okay, we'll be very careful feeding foals probiotics. And I would caution that too, especially with very young animals, because there's very, very limited research. And so, like, we're very clear with that as well. Like, with very young animals, we're like, there's not a lot of good research. We have no negative incidences of it happening. But in some of these cases, there were. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like it was terrible. It was just a case of foal diarrhea. It was a little extended. It certainly didn't have any beneficial impact. Mm-hmm. But to me, that made the case of, because I'm on the side of, we need to feed different bacteria that actually naturally inhabit the gut, that this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. Because if this bacteria was doing so great, mm-hmm. why did it get knocked out in the first place? Mm-hmm. So, like, adding a bit more, is that really going to be beneficial?
All right. So, yeah, the short answer is yes.
Again.
Okay. Here's somebody who feeds Optimum Digestive Health. And for those of you who don't know what Optimum Digestive Health, it's a pre and probiotic that we make here at Mad Barn. She feeds it on a regular basis. Say, Nadine, she asked questions last time. I remember. Hi, Nadine. I remember you from.
Well, thanks
from
for joining us again.
Yeah, we have a regular.
Nadine, we'll have to send her some swag. Like, thanks, Nadine. You're our first double question person.
So she wants to know, if she feeds the Optimum Digestive Health on a regular basis, would I still need to feed the extra probiotic in stressful situations after deworming, or if a horse is on antibiotics? Good question. We get that a lot.
It is a great question. And I'm not going to actually, the short answer is no, you shouldn't need to feed the extra, because you're already feeding, particularly with Optimum Digestive Health, where it has a very high level of yeast and probiotics in it already. So the basal level that you're feeding is already quite fortified, I guess, when it comes to this kind of things. And again, talking about the prebiotics and the toxin binders. So I wouldn't say it's necessary completely. I do have a philosophy, though, that there's probably merit in bouncing things a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Where you increase or decrease the dose through time just to move the needle once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no actual science behind this.
You're going to start a whole bunch of questions about this, because even I have questions about that now. So you're saying,
but when you look at so many metabolic processes, right? That like a bit of a change.
Yeah.
And again, you have to be careful with this, because people are like, oh, can I just make a wild feed change? No, you absolutely don't want to do that. But sometimes moving things around can, you know, shift the system a little bit.
So by moving things around, do you mean more so, I give the horse a scoop of Optimum probiotics, or a scoop every day, and then, I'm sorry, let's go back to ODH. I'm giving the horse ODH. I'm giving him a scoop. Maybe for a little bit, I pull him back smaller, like a quarter of a scoop.
So like if you have a worming schedule, you know, and again, this is purely me just hypothetical. I have no scientific evidence that this might actually be beneficial. So let's remember that.
Disclaimer.
But if I knew I was going to worm my horse, so let's say I'm feeding ODH all the time, because I've really seen improvements in my horse's health and overall well-being. And then I'm like, okay, we're going to worm the horse in 2 weeks. I'd be like, okay, let's drop the dose down to like a quarter dose for a week and a half. And then we're going to crank it up to like a 1.5 times dose. So net overall through the feeding period, we're going to give the same amount of ingredients. Mm-hmm. It's just, we're going to have caused a shift through. Okay. And then when we give the, I'll call it an insult with the worming, mm-hmm, that we, you know, we've already got this kind of big dose going in and we've got this positive impact.
Okay. That makes sense to me. This whole discussion tonight is just going to pretty much be on probiotics, you know, because there's a lot of stuff. Once we get into ulcers, we get into a whole other bag of tricks, and we can touch on ulcers tonight. And I know there's people that are going to want to talk about it, but we have so many questions about probiotics. Here's Camille. She says, I noticed when I removed probiotics, the manure was slightly more solid and less mild bloating, abdominal discomfort. I was surprised. I guess so.
I can make an argument for any kind of, outcome you could come up with when it comes to probiotics. So maybe it was too much. Maybe the diet you're feeding was already extremely highly fermentable. Mm-hmm. And so you already had like really strong proliferation bacteria. Now you're just adding more into the situation. Again, depending on what the strains were, or just we're not agreeing with the horse for whatever reason. I mean, that again, like I'll be very open about this. Mm-hmm. The research in horses in terms of strains that we use, there's still so much we don't know. Like there's a lot of good research, don't get me wrong, like particularly in the yeast strains that we use, but having said that, horses, you know, it's very diverse. Like when you look at the genome, the phenotypes that we have for horses, it's not like dairy cows or pigs or chickens, which are like very homogeneous in how we've bred them. And so when we come up with solutions for them, it typically works, say, like 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. Because horses, the breeds and the genetics is so variable, it could be that, like, yeah, this works like 80% of the time, but in this case, it just doesn't. Which does leave horses a bit of trial and error.
Yes.
Which isn't awesome. And we are working towards like trying to come up with solutions to get rid of some of that trial and error.
Yeah. But Scott, to be fair, you know, she's asking a pretty cool question, because, and we're answering it, which is neat too, because most people just skip over that one. Right. Yeah. And, you know, we have to answer the good along with the bad, right? It's not all miracle
work. It's not even bad. Like if you feed something and you know, the outcome's not what you expected, that's still a result and it's still worth learning. And I think the key to that is recognizing it and looking at it. Like, is it now, the other thing that's super important to understand here too, is like particularly with horses, it's an N of one, right? And so here's something, this is off topic a little bit, like probably the number one thing we hear is nothing changed and then this happened. Right. And like this happened could be anything. Mm-hmm. The coat color changed, or the horse is a little more lethargic, or the horse got hot, whatever it is. And I just, every time I read nothing else changed, I cringe because everything changes all the time. Just because we don't necessarily recognize the change, or we're not observing other things changing, they are changing.
Oh yeah. It's not all external, right?
Well, it's just like so many things going on, and like to us, this is what we saw. We implemented this change, so it could be like we added this probiotic and then this happened, or you know, whatever changed. But there's so many different things that are going into that. Sure. Anyways, that's not to take away from the fact, because there are definitely situations where people, they do it repeatedly too, right? They're like, I fed it for a while, this was the outcome, I took it out, this was the outcome, and it really, really looks like this is the issue. And it could be, like I said, it could just be the wrong strains. It could be the you know, how they're feeding the horse is already on a very high level of fermentable hindgut. Like there'd be a lot of fructans, just be a lot of like coming back to the horse's digestive system. Like even with some of these soluble fibers we talk about, like there can be rapidly fermentable carbohydrates that, you know, they don't get digested in the small intestine, they hit the hindgut, and it's just like, it's almost like starch in the hindgut, how fast they ferment. And so it may just take a little extra, like, oh, you made it even more digestible by adding these probiotics or something in there. And you're like, wow, this is actually causing discomfort for the horse. And then, you know, like maybe in time that actually would have subsided and the horse would have adapted to it. And because that happens too, right? You just like, and again, you totally understand, like if there's a negative side effect, you don't want to keep doing it.
No, and most people would be wise enough to stop, right? Okay, well, so she's just saying she's going to give it a try. This is Nadine. She was saying she's going to give it a try and let us know. She ran out of it. That's fine. Horse had diarrhea. Won't do that again. Hey, okay, gotcha. All right, so Sandra, she wants to know, she came late. That's okay, Sandra. She was probably out in the barn feeding horses and watering off.
Doing important things, right?
Exactly. So But you know what, Sandra, before we get to your question, this whole thing is taped. So you can go back and watch it again. And, you know, people that are our number one fans can watch it 10 times and hit the like button over and over and over again. But yeah, so Sandra came in late talking about probiotics recommended for the average horse on Omneity. Okay, hold on. I came in late. So not sure if you answered this, but are probiotics recommended for the average horse on Omneity, which is another Mad Barn product, or should it be added in stressful situations? How is it different than Visceral? Okay, let's start with Omneity. So you're feeding the horse Omneity daily. Should you add your probiotic to that?
It depends. So Omneity does have some probiotics. The yeast and the enzymes already added into it. And for like the vast majority of horses, that's sufficient in terms of any probiotic addition. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about Omneity is you're balancing your minerals and vitamins. Yeah. So you're feeding both the microbiome and the horse sufficiently for optimal health. Now, if you're in stressful situations or, trailing horses, competition horses, those kind of things, yes, something like Visceral would definitely be added on top and recommended as a prophylactic just to avoid gastric ulcers. Or in the case of you've already been, you know, competing or doing something with your horse that's showing discomfort as a way to help alleviate that.
Actually, I remember being with you once in Florida, and there was a horse they couldn't figure out, and it was more of a lameness issue that they were complaining about, and you had said, well, give them Visceral, because you know that pain can come out in all different forms.
That's such a great point, because you know, we'll do the inverse of this too, where you know, like somebody's like, oh, my horse has ulcers, your horse has ulcers, and it's showing these symptoms, you're like, I think your horse is sore.
Right.
And it may have some ulcers and gut issues, but even if you alleviate those, whether it's our product, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whatever, and you're like, well, the horse is still showing symptoms, and it's a lameness issue. A lot of times, like particularly off feed situations, we see that where as soon as the horse goes off feed, it's immediately assumed it's a gut issue. And sometimes, quite a few times, it's a lameness issue because if horses are sore, they will go off feed. They will reduce feed intake. And again, this is probably another podcast for another time, but like by the time we visually see lameness in a horse and you think how they evolved, like they do not want to show lameness. I mean, that's basically death to them, right? Mm-hmm. So by the time we pick it up, it's usually significant. And so that can be a reason for off feed. But like you said too, it can go the other way where it can be gut issues and you just correct those. You're like, oh, my horse is great again.
Exactly. So yeah. Showing like I think that's even what happened too with that horse. We put the horse on it and that particular issue went away. But it's amazing what stress can do to an animal. My horse seems better after a month on Visceral. I'm with you, Cheryl. Should I keep feeding it or wait until the symptoms return?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, and you know, a lot of times it really depends, because you know, as a horse owner myself, and you're gotta be budget conscious. It's not just free, like money doesn't grow on trees as much as our Canadian government thinks it does. Sorry, I'll get back on track here. There's people getting along. Anyways, but yes, essentially, if whatever caused the situation that you needed in the first place still exists, then yeah, you need to stay on. So like a lot of times when we're talking like horses going to events, like if you're in competition, then yeah, best to stay on it, then wait till the symptoms are up. And I will preface this with, anytime you wait till you see symptoms, it's going to be that much harder to fix after that. It's the old, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Well, I always say to people when I'm talking to them about Visceral in particular, start at about a month out from when you think the stress is going to begin, especially if you know your training schedule, the horse is laid up right now, you're about a month out from going back to work, get ahead of it, right?
Yeah, but you know, to her question though, I think you know, some of it's too, like, well, do I have to stay on this forever? Like,
that okay?
It's okay. It's definitely okay to leave them on it long term.
Because I have one who's been on it forever. But that's because, to be honest, he's an OTTB. He was a fire breathing dragon.
Yeah.
He was going to hurt somebody, you know, and this changed his mentality, his rideability, his temperament, everything changed. Do I want to risk taking him off and going back to possibly the fire breathing dragon again, or keep my nice happy guy? And you know, in my case, he's a lifer.
So I mean, this brings up a great point though, like experimentation too, like again, like these are your horses, they're long term with you, so you're like, okay, well, let's try it one time. And if you pull them off and you're like, symptoms returned immediately, well, that's telling, right?
Yeah.
Symptoms, you may be able to go long periods of time and you can start to see even the slightest thing and you'll quickly get back onto it and stop it. I always encourage experimentation when it comes to these things. There's no one answer fits every horse. There's definitely general guidelines in terms of, like, we know there's definite stressors. The horse, and what's funny about this is, like, the people, when you're like, okay, your horse is doing this activity, it for sure has gastric ulcers, but the horse looks great, amazing. It's performing at top notch. And one of the vets used to do a lot of scopes. She told me, she's like, you know, I used to do thoroughbreds all the time. And she goes, I would scope these horses and it would look like a hand grenade went off in their stomach and they would be beautiful. She goes, you would never know they had a gastric ulcer to save. Like, the guy was like blown away. And he goes, by the same time, it could just look like the tiniest. And you thought somebody shot that horse in the stomach. He was showing so many symptoms of it. So, I mean, the outward symptoms aren't always the greatest telltale.
And that's the breed too, right? Because we get this a lot. People with warm bloods, they don't show it the same way as, say, a thoroughbred or standardbred does. The more stoic animal, like the quarter horse, the warm blood, they don't show the symptoms the way your thoroughbred does, whose eyes turn blood red and he's trying to kill you all the time, right? They're totally different. Every breed is different and some are more stoic than others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not even just, I'm sure there's breed difference, absolutely. But even within a breeding, you're going to see that kind of difference. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's the typical male thing. I get a bit of a cough and I'm out for a week.
At least you've admitted it.
My wife's got full blown COVID. She's like, I'm still fine. You know.
Oh, gosh. Okay, Judy. Judy wants to know if probiotics good to help with mud fever. The fact that mud fever's been hanging on for over 6 months is very, mud fever for over 6 months. That's frustrating. Judy, I don't know. I've always been one of those people who understood that once you get it once, you're very prone to get it again. Correct?
Yeah, most likely. And like, I honestly, feeding probiotics to help with mud fever, unlikely. Yeah. You're looking at more of a superficial, like, external issue. Mm-hmm. You probably have better luck rubbing the probiotics on the actual area. Again, you know, like, when you look internally at some of the benefits, like in gastric ulceration, probiotics are certainly not a cure-all for gastric ulcers, but one of the mechanisms that does help a little bit is that they actually protect the open sore from pathogenic bacteria, because they,
so you're not kidding. Like, you could,
I wouldn't necessarily, because they're not going to like the environment. They're not going to like the oxygen in the environment necessarily. So you'd need very specific bacteria, like, more like things like zinc, just keeping them dry. Yes, and like, yeah, again, dry. Proper mineral and vitamin nutrition. So anytime there's like an immune related thing where it's just like chronic infection or fungal infection or something like that, you're like, okay, let's get back to the basal diet. You know, are we adequate in selenium? Are we adequate in vitamin E, zinc, and copper? Are these things that can easily kind of, at least, now, I'm not going to say they're going to fix the problem with mud fever, because like you said, once you have it, it can be an ongoing issue, but really it becomes a hygiene situation where you really got to work hard to keep it dry.
And that's hard, especially this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, but also, if you haven't done the diet evaluation, Judy, do it, because, you know, maybe we can help you out that way too.
That's always the first step. Honestly, if you do not know how your diet is balanced for your horse, that's step number one. It'll save you so much money in the long run. Making sure the basics of the diet are covered first before you ever go near a supplement, a probiotic, or anything. This is step number one, always.
Back to Sandra. She's got a second question here. She has an off-track standardbred, little nervous. She put the horse on magnesium, wondering if Visceral would be a better option.
Again, it really depends what the issue is. I mean, magnesium oftentimes gets used as a calmer and gets, people do notice benefits. I have a very distinct theory on this, and this is actually well-founded and some good science in that, you know, when you start really looking at a horse's diet that's extremely high in potassium, if it's on a high forage diet, this isn't necessarily a negative thing. It's just a fact. And they tend to be quite low in magnesium. And when you come back to, like, how we determine requirements for horses, so like NRC requirements for horses are determined to avoid a deficient state. It's not an optimal state, it's to avoid a deficiency. And so when they do the calculation, they're like, well, they're not showing overt clinical symptoms of magnesium deficiency. But when you actually look at the diet and how magnesium and potassium compete for absorption, or the interactions between them, when you boost magnesium levels up, and this isn't just in horses, this is in multiple species, it's well above what we call the requirement, that we see all these beneficial responses. So a lot of times when people say, wow, I really noticed a benefit when I gave magnesium for calming my horse, I say, your horse is deficient in magnesium. Right. You just brought it up to where it needed to be. Would Visceral be a better option? If the issue is gut related, absolutely. visceral is going to be a better option. Now you're going to get the magnesium with the visceral in there as well. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of cover two bases with it. If the magnesium is working and it's getting you where you want to be, then obviously, I mean, that's a less expensive option.
Right.
And it's unlikely that it's a gut issue that was creating the problem.
And the magnesium is in Omnady too. So if you're feeding Omnady, you should be able to balance that out as well.
Yeah, like our, I mean, the whole basis of when we make feeding programs is, yeah, so Omnady, Aminotrace, whatever, we're boosting the magnesium up quite a bit over like any traditional kind of feed programs that we put together for the horses. This is how strongly I believe in the fact that we are just underfeeding magnesium to so many horses, mm-hmm. which is why you see it as such a big ingredient in the calming market, I believe. And but like, you don't need to go out and spend crazy dollars on a calming supplement. Mm-hmm. You get magnesium in the horse, get the diet balanced with the right mineral and vitamin balancer for a very like inexpensive amount of money. And, see the benefits there, and you probably get rid of a lot of things you're putting into the diet.
But anytime you see off track in front of anything, thoroughbred or standardbred, you kind of can, it's pretty safe to say ulcers live there.
Yeah, I mean, again, like just the way we house horses, I kind of, earlier on, I kind of made a comment where it was like, oh, you know, most horses maybe don't have gut issues. But when you look at the data and the research that they've done, even in like basically sedentary horses that you would think are living paddock paradise,
right.
And you're running a 50% gastric ulceration rate in those horses.
Yeah.
And then you get into like race horses or high performance horses, and you may as well just assume it's 100%.
Right.
And again, there's a lot of people out there like, my horse is great. They do look great. They mm-hmm. look absolutely mm-hmm. fantastic, but they still have gastric ulceration. Yeah. It's just they're coping with it essentially.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something really kind of funny about my guy on visceral. As far as I know, you know, his symptoms obviously, but his coat changes every season. So like it is covered in dapples on the visceral, covered in them. And he goes to a dark chocolate brown in the fall and a beautiful bay in the summer. Like that's really all he receives, that and Omnady. And I mean, he looks absolutely fantastic on the product and feels like a different animal. What I always say to people who are on top, sitting on top of a horse, is that you'll feel the difference with a horse who's been using visceral, when with rideability, they become so much more rideable and so much more willing to do the job at hand. In fact, we tried this with some standardbreds one year when I was down in Pennsylvania or Ohio with some, and it changed the drivability with some of those horses too. Like this, it doesn't, obviously it's not going to, we're not necessarily saying it's going to speed them up or make them go slower, but the drivers were saying it changed the whole drivability of the horse.
I mean, I want to get to this question. Actually, Dr. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's Dr. Langlois that we have made that comment on there from Quebec, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a great comment. I want to make sure we get to that. But just take your own, like from your own perspective, if you've ever had disturbance in your gut, for instance, like how uncomfortable
and grouchy.
That is. Mm-hmm. Grouchy, just like it's a miserable mm-hmm. existence to mm-hmm. be like that versus when everything's feeling great. Like you just compare those two things. Now think about your horse. If it's chronically like that, just every day is like that. And I think that is why, and it's not just our product. If you treat with pharmaceuticals as well, you're like, mm-hmm. like the horse just did that, mm-hmm. right? Like
yeah.
it's
well, you've got to squeeze that horse. And when their guts are angry, you can't squeeze. It's like they get really angry at the squeezing, and then you can squeeze and ask, and things just happen a little more naturally, a little kinder.
This is a great point to suggest that wean off slowly, because this goes, this is actually how visceral got started in the first place was, treating with GastroGuard mm-hmm. and then stopping, and the recurrence rate is almost 100%. Mm-hmm. You're like, why is the rebound? Well, there's two reasons. One, a lot of times that whatever caused the issue in the first place hasn't been removed. So you took away the pharmaceutical and the same issue is still there. So it just comes back. Mm-hmm. The second reason is this acid rebound we talk about if on drugs. And it's not just drugs. It is also if you're using, buffers.
Right.
Wow, that almost mm-hmm. eluded me there for mm-hmm. a minute. If you use buffers, you get kind of the same impact where you can buffer the stomach. And this is what the pharmaceuticals do in the stomach. Essentially, you want to raise the pH so the low pH in the stomach isn't causing the ulceration mm-hmm. in the non-glandular mm-hmm. region. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is something we need to talk about too, is mm-hmm. the glandular ulcers as well. We'll get to mm-hmm. that in a minute. But think about any biological process, the one most people can relate to is when your arm falls asleep, mm-hmm. the needles and the pins you mm-hmm. get, right? So what happens is you've cut the blood supply off to your arm doing whatever you're sleeping, and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm mm-hmm. sleeping on my arm and I can't feel it, and I wake up and you get that dead mm-hmm. arm mm-hmm. and then it hurts like hell. why does it hurt so bad? Because what happens is, like, the blood flowing through any part of your body at any given time is not flowing through the entirety of the microvasculature. Most of it's actually shut off. And so there's this chronic opening and closing of the microvasculature that's happening at any given time where blood flow is needed. Now, if you started exercising, obviously it opens up more. The point is, when you cut it off completely, it opens wide open, because now you've starved the entire system. And so you just get this mass rush once you remove the occlusion. And you're like, ah, it burns so bad. And then it goes back to normal, because that's the process, again, the biology kind of bringing itself back to homeostasis. Well, you've put this pharmaceutical agent in, and you've lifted the pH of the stomach. So you've inhibited basically acid secretion in the gut. You've allowed the stomach to heal. I mean, they have patents on this. I mean, it works. Like, nobody's saying this doesn't work. You've allowed the stomach to heal, but now you remove the pharmaceutical agent, and to the point of, we do it slowly. A lot of people don't. They just take it away. And then basically the stomach's like, woohoo, we need to make acid again. And it shoots way over. And then obviously that erodes the stomach lining again very quickly. And you have this high recurrence rate, which is super frustrating, because the treatments, the pharmaceutical treatments anyways, the ones that are patented for treatment are not inexpensive, we'll say. And so then, you know, the original prospect of the product was, okay, can we stop that rebound? And it was highly effective in doing that. And then we've, like, over time, we figured out, okay, well, a lot of times we can just use this on its own. Sometimes we need to use other interventions, like for really significant cases, like when we have ulceration in the glandular region, which, again, I don't have a solid answer for this, but there is good evidence that it's caused not necessarily by the acid secretion so much as bile reflux coming from the small intestine that then kind of eats away at that glandular region. And you wouldn't really expect the same, I guess, approach that protects the non-glandular region to impact that region. And so we are doing some work with some people to look at, is there ways that we can kind of that we can deal with this bile reflux. So again, if you know, if there's anybody experiencing this issue, reach out to us, because we are currently working on a solution for that, and do have it. It's not marketing, but we're working with people to deliver something that works in that scenario.
Yeah, when people call and they're on something like a GastroGuard, or and they say, oh, I had 28 days and then I stopped, and then, you know, you really do, the slow withdrawal is really important, and then that's when you slowly start to add, to me, your visceral. So they meet in the middle.
Yeah, there should definitely be crossover, like before you start backing off pharmaceutical treatment, to add that back in.
Alrighty. Claire Wrigley says, I've reduced the daily dose of visceral to half the recommended amount. I was hoping to be a little more efficient with the cost. Understand that. We understand that. But am I still offering my mare enough to help and maintain? Because I think what Claire is doing is maintaining now.
Yeah, and again, great question, because you know, at the end of the day, when we, you know, you come up with these products, you go through all the research, you know, okay, this is the amount of glutamine we need to feed, this is the amount of lecithin we're going to put in this product, and all the different ingredients that are in there, and we optimize it and say, okay, well, this is kind of our recommended feeding rate. Well, again, it's not a one size fits all, and we do highly recommend people experiment with, because maybe you can cut the dose in half. And likewise, sometimes we got to half the dose up in a more stressful situation for certain horses. You know, that 80 grams or whatever is kind of like what we recommend for your average starting place. And then, yeah, by all means, experiment with the different dosages. At a half dose, I mean, when you look at the ingredient inclusions, again, you're still getting significant amounts of probiotics, yeast, and glutamine in there that are still having a benefit, physiological effect. It's going to obviously be less than the full dose, but maybe that's enough for your horse.
And yeah, and she's doing it from a cost perspective too. And we understand that, right? So, but yeah, good job, Claire. All right, we got another one here from Melanie. Melanie has a Hanoverian that has water syndrome. She put him on the Optimum. So I'm going to say the Optimum probiotics daily, and it cleared up. That's great, Melanie. Will he be okay to stay on this long term, or should he be on a different Mad Barn supplement? He's also on the Amino Trace for his feet.
So thanks for the question. Yeah. I do want to clarify one thing. So the Amino Trace is a complete mineral vitamin supplement. It does definitely help with the feet, but like it is not like your traditional hoof supplement. It completely balances the diet. So your horse does need to be on the Amino Trace all the time. In terms of the Optimum probiotic clearing up the fecal water syndrome, if it's cleared up, again, I would experiment. I know it's a little scary to experiment, especially with people that have had it for a long time, because you're like, oh, finally something worked. But like, again, you may be able to take it out and still maintain the horse without the probiotic addition.
And it's okay to do a little trial and error on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Because usually you'll see right away, like if you're, you know, just like the former person that asked, like the horse got a little bloated when I was giving the probiotics. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I took him off and he wasn't. Well, you're probably best to leave him off. Likewise, clear up the fecal water syndrome, take him off. It starts to show a hint of coming back. We'll put him back on it.
Yeah, no. And a few more here before we wrap it up for the day, because, you know, this was originally, this was going to be like a 10 parter. You know, there was a lot of things we were going to talk about, but I think, you know, it's important that we got on probiotics. We got a lot of questions about it. And, you know, we're going to be back in a couple of weeks, and maybe in a couple of weeks we'll do ulcers, because ulcers is a whole other hour at least, right? I mean,
I thought we were doing ulcers this time.
Well, we've talked a lot about ulcers. It's 8 o'clock. And, you know, we do want to talk about colic too, because, hey, everybody wants to know how they can help to prevent colic. We do want to talk a little bit more about free fecal water syndrome too with you guys. Again, Megan here, she is asking your thoughts of post-probiotics versus probiotics.
I think it's just postbiotics versus probiotics. And you should put this on the You Stumped the Nutritionist part, because I actually don't know what a postbiotic is.
No, me neither. I'm thinking she probably means pre, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. So maybe she'll ask something else. Julian back at the top, don't worry about putting it up, guys. It's okay. She just asked if it would be recorded. Yes, it's going to be recorded. So you can watch this at any time and come back and view it again. We'll go back up there, guys. I saw one I like. Oldenburg, this one here. This is a good one.
Well, we're cherry picking them now. So
No, but these are some ones that we missed, because there are all these people telling us where they were from. It was back from the beginning, and she had asked right at the beginning of the show. So Christina was right there. Oldenburg, who has tons of spook concerns and causes ulcers, his own anxiety personality.
Anxious.
Yeah. So Oldenburg with spook concerns, any horse with spook concerns, do you think about ulcers there?
Yeah, always. Again, just, you know, from the amount of people that come back and like, oh, wow, that's really calmed my horse down. You definitely want to look at it. And I don't want to take away like training and just like, you know, some horses by nature
are just going to,
but you just have a higher level of energy and things like that. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's not a cure all, but again, first thing, make sure the diet's balanced. Because again, like, you know, you can be deficiency, even like things like thiamine, which you wouldn't expect to be deficient in a horse, because again, the hindgut does make some B vitamins, but it does impact brain function. You know, we talked a little bit about, like Joe, I didn't even talk about it, the gut brain axes. You know, if you have minor dysbiosis, it can cause significant impacts on basically the psychology of the horse, and large impacts on their behavior. So it's definitely, you know, it's definitely something to investigate. But I, like, again, with anything, you don't want to just do, like, hey, let's throw a whole bunch of stuff at it. You want to take a very methodical approach to it. Say, okay, let's look at the whole diet first. Hay analysis would be a great place to start. And we can help you with that. Get the diet balanced and go, okay, the diet's now balanced. We've done all these things. Is it still an issue? Has it gotten any better? Has it gotten any worse? And then, okay, let's take another approach and let's look at some possible gut issues that may be in there.
I find too, sometimes the change in the season, especially in the fall, when things get cold like this, they get a little goofy every once in a while. And it's the same in spring, because they get spring fever. But that's for us here in Canada, where we have four seasons. If you're living, you know, in North Carolina, you really don't, right?
Right.
So certainly for people who have four seasons. I did see, oh yes, I'm glad you pulled this one up. Lori Brock, she's a brand new horse owner. Welcome to the world of horse ownership, Lori. It's just a great ride. Literally.
You get to listen to late night podcasts about probiotics and manure and everything else.
All sorts of fun things.
What would you rather be doing on a Thursday night?
But I'd rather be here with you, actually. Yeah. as a new horse owner, what do you suggest? Lori. Can I just say, I think the first thing as a new horse owner is you found the right spot, is to be here with the team at Mad Barn, because we're here to help you. And doing that diet evaluation, or even just sending in an email to us and asking. Certainly, we want to know the breed of the horse, the age of the horse, what you're planning on doing with the horse, as the most information as possible. Are you at a boarding facility? Is the horse in your own backyard? Because that is something that affects people. Is the barn manager going to do all these things every day, or is this something you're committed to doing every day? But we can certainly help you with a new horse and as a new owner to make sure you're well-educated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know what, the number one piece of advice I would give any new horse owner is stay off Google, quite frankly. No, but like Google Scholar is your friend. So, no, like it really is. Like you go to somebody you really trust.
It's like the MD that when you Google your own problems and next thing you know, you're in really bad shape.
You can become a hypochondriac. You forget everything that's wrong with you, ever been wrong with you. Uh-huh. No, but like, I mean, horses are great animals. And people make a lot of jokes about, horses, they all just, you look at them wrong and they're going to get injured or hurt or something like that. They've been around a long, long time. They've evolved. They've basically brought humanity to where we are today. Mm-hmm. We came here on our horse's back. They're very durable animals. Wouldn't stress too much about it. And just, focus on the fundamentals first and foremost. Stay out of the supplement aisle. And I say that, we're in the supplement aisle.
True.
Stay away from there for now and get the basics right. Get the diet right first and foremost. Get that horse eating lots of forage. And you'll find you and your horse are going to have a long and happy relationship if you just do that.
Oh, we're getting some nice compliments about our customer service. And, I think because we're all horse owners, we're very empathetic and sympathetic, and we really do want to help you out. We want your horse to be happy and healthy.
Well, and I talked about it on the last one, this really is our mission, is to help horse owners, and it's, drive our research program, get the information that we don't have for horse owners, and then deliver it to you, hopefully in a manner that you find somewhat entertaining or at least useful, that you can take. And we'll get other people on here, I promise, to deliver this in a much better manner than I do, and give you more information than I can. But that, that is our mandate. And hopefully that is what we're delivering for people. And like you said, we do have an entire team of nutritionists. I think the number is now well in excess of 10,000 diets formulated. So crazy. There's a good chance we've seen any issue that you can bring to us now and had experience working with these people. And I mean, we have a tremendously talented team. I can't say enough about the team that,
And not just from Canada. We've got team members down in the United States now too.
Yeah. This is our way of wrapping this up.
It is. It feels like a nice end to the show, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, we do. But we do. I mean, there's so much more to talk about from a gut health standpoint and to dive deeper in, and we will down the road. I think we've covered, some of the basics.
Yeah, hopefully. But we got lots more to cover.
Yeah, no question. I mean, the horse's digestive system is, people spend their entire careers just studying that alone. And, hopefully one day we'll get one of them on here to dive even deeper into it. And you know what? If we haven't answered your question here today, you can just email us.
Yeah, email
somebody
us.
Somebody will get back to you.
Yeah, email us at info@madbarn.com with any questions you might have. And, I think we will wrap it up for the night tonight. But a couple of things I just want to mention one more time. So this whole podcast was recorded. So if you missed the beginning of it, don't worry about it. It'll be up on YouTube. It'll be up on our Facebook page for sure, the Mad Barn Facebook page. And also we want you to check for Mad Barn Live on your favorite podcasting app. Make sure to rate it. Two thumbs up.
I'm not sure my ego can handle that.
Anyways. See, you guys are Sophie, she wins socks. She says you two are very interesting and fun. That's
we'll,
right.
We'll buy your love if we have to.
And looking forward to the next webinar. And you know what, Carrie? The next webinar is going to be not next Thursday, but the Thursday after. So we decided that we're going to host these podcasts every other Thursday going forward. So you get to see our faces every other Thursday at 7 o'clock, right?
Yeah, except I don't think the every other Thursday is going to happen the next one. Anyways, we'll
send
it out.
We'll have some special guests. Don't you worry. We'll have special guests when Scott's away or if there's a bad snowstorm and I can't get into town. We'll make sure that there's somebody here to help you out. But for sure, any questions that you have, please send it to info@madbarn.com. Log on to our website. If you're in Canada, it's madbarn.ca. If you're in the United States, it is madbarn.com. Make sure that if you're ordering products and you live in Canada, you're on .ca. If you're ordering and you live in the States, you are at .com. And again, thanks for a great night, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. Yeah, it's always, as always, a pleasure to have you up here.
It's really, really informative. Every time I leave from spending some time with you, my mind is blown. So on behalf of all of us horse owners out there, thanks for all the work that you've done, Scott. Thank you to the team at Mad Barn, and we'll see you all in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.